It's estimated that nearly 5 million Americans suffer from chronic wounds, the result of diabetes, poor circulation of the lower extremities, edema, as well as pressure ulcers and traumatic injuries. These are more than simply painful annoyances. A chronic wound that's left to progress can result in significant complications that can include amputation and sepsis, a serious blood infection that can even result in death. So joining me this morning to discuss the causes and treatments for these kinds of chronic wounds is Dr. Marvin Hybor, the Director of Wound Care Program and Hyperbaric Medicine at Upstate Medical University, and Dr. Mohammed Elfar. He is the Director of the Clark Burn Center and Assistant Professor of Surgery specializing in the surgical treatment of non-healing wounds at Upstate Medical University. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming in today.
Good morning.
So let's start with what constitutes a chronic wound? What is it that we're talking about when we talk about a chronic wound, Dr. Hybor?
You know, we're really looking at normally if you get a break or a crack in the skin and maybe you cut your arm or your leg on something, you'd expect that to go through a normal healing, 3 to 4 stage healing process, you know, over a period of days where it would close up. So we're really talking about wounds that don't follow that normal process and don't heal as we would expect them to, but instead get stalled for various reasons and just sit, you know, open to the air, and they can be superficial to deep, but just not completely healing.
So it's basically prolonged not healing.
Correct.
So what are the kinds of things that cause that, those chronic non-healing wounds?
You know, there's various factors that can be involved, you know, whether it's, you know, diabetes, which can cause slowing of a wound healing process, loss of sensation in the feet, deformities in the feet that can cause wounds. It might be ulcerations on the legs that can't heal because there's too much swelling in the legs. It may be an ulcer, you know, on the heel or on the buttock that just won't heal because of pressure issues related to a patient's medical conditions.
In most cases, there are underlying medical conditions, though, that basically are responsible for the fact that someone won't heal.
Most of the time there are, yes. And that's really part of a comprehensive wound care program, is to take a look at the wound and not just say, yeah, you got a non-healing wound, but really to assess it and decide on the multiple systemic and local factors involved that are preventing this wound, that caused the wound and are preventing this wound from healing.
So the point of the program is also to prevent it going on to further problems. Isn't that right? I mean, because as I said in the opening, you can end up with a total blood infection that can really threaten your life.
That is definitely correct. And so it's not only taking an approach to figure out why the wound occurred, how we're going to get the wound to heal, but then how we're going to prevent future wounds.
Do you ever discover an underlying medical condition that might not have been known before that? In other words, is that ever the clue? The fact that somebody's got a non-healing wound and all of a sudden you realize that, okay, because more and more these days we're hearing that people are being diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, for example, and I've heard more and more some people say, I never even knew I had it. I mean, is it ever the wound that's the non-healing wound that's the clue?
It's sometimes correct. You run into a patient who has an open wound, and as Dr. Hybor indicated earlier, wound is just a discontinuity in the skin. Typically, we expect any wound to heal properly. When the wound does not heal properly, then we have to scratch our heads and start thinking, why is that happening? And this is where we start looking into the comorbidities many patients may not be aware of, but they do have, such as diabetes, poor circulation, neuropathies, and I'm sure it happens, and it will happen that we run into one of these diagnoses that the patient was not aware of. It's just happened by the virtue of having an ulcer that's not healing.
And the point that you made earlier, Dr. Hybor, also is that you lose, especially in diabetics, they lose the feeling often in their feet, I understand, so that the chance of injuring themselves might be greater because you're, is that correct, Dr.?
It's absolutely correct. Neuropathy, typically it's a peripheral neuropathy in the extremities. They can could have some trauma without feeling that there is a crack or a tear or an injury to their skin, and they don't feel it just because they don't have sensation. And by the virtue of having no sensation, that little ulcer could become worse and worse until it's brought to their attention. And at that point, the ulcer should be treated as well as the neuropathy should be addressed.
There's another thing I saw also in just reviewing for this conversation, that there's something called a venous leg ulcer. Mm-hmm. And tell us about that. How does that get started, and who kinds of patients suffer from
well,
that?
Basically, venous stasis ulcer is a form of failure of drainage of the blood from the lower extremity back to the heart. So what that leads to is pooling of the blood, congestion of the veins, and eventually the blood component starts seeping out and eventually causing some deposition under the skin, and that eventually, simply put, kills the skin, causing sloughing of that segment. And we call this venous stasis ulcer. There are several forms of that depending on which part of the venous system is sick. Patients who develop this kind of ulcer are basically those that stand on their feet for quite a while, you know, during their work. Patients who are morbidly obese, patients who have some deficiency or basically a defect in their venous system, especially in the valve part. So the blood basically doesn't return back properly, it pools down, and it causes consequently the ulcer.
Is that why sometimes when people have jobs that where they have to be on their feet, very often they will wear hosiery that keeps the pressure on their lower leg?
That's exactly the reason why.
Yeah, so that they wouldn't develop those kinds of
ulcers.
Things. All right. Well, I'm going to ask you to hold that thought. We've got lots more to talk about. I want to talk about treatment when we come back, but we're going to have to take a short break, and we'll be back talking to both Dr. Hibor and Dr. Alfar. Welcome back to HealthLink on Air. Linda Cohen, along with Drs. Hibor and Alfar, and we're talking about how to heal chronic wounds. Now, before the break, we were talking all about the kinds of wounds you can get and the variety of underlying diseases that are responsible for them, whether it be the venous stasis issue or diabetes causing it. Dr. Hibor, what is the standard treatment generally? How do you begin this process of treating?
The patient's initially going to come in to the wound care center, and the main issue is going to be a problem wound, a wound that's not healing. We may or may not know the cause, or what we call the etiology of the wound when they first arrive. So we're really going to want to take a systematic approach to the patient, and part of the initial process is trying to determine what that etiology of that wound is.
What the cause is.
Yes, and you know, we can probably get 80-85% of these non-healing wounds categorized as a certain type of wound, and that's really going to help us in the approach as far as what are the systemic causes in the patient's body and the local factors that are preventing the wound from healing, and they'll vary depending on what etiology it is.
And generally, when you say 85%, what falls under the 85%? What's usually the cause?
Yeah, so we're looking at diabetic foot ulcers, which we had touched on. Venous stasis ulcers, which we had touched on, pressure ulcers, and also arterial insufficiency ulcers.
Okay, so then what do you do? You've determined, let's say, that you've determined the cause, and then how do you approach it?
We'll make sure we see the patients on a weekly basis, typically, in order to be able to assess the wound and to debride the wound as necessary. And that's going to be, you know, numbing up the wound and taking surgical instruments to clean out any dead tissue. And I tell patients it's analogous to a construction site where we're trying to build a house. And as time goes on, the construction workers are throwing all the leftover stuff out into the yard. And if you just leave it there, they're not going to be able to get to the building anymore. No more work's going to get done. So we want to constantly be cleaning that out from the wound so that the cells can continue to regenerate and heal.
And then depending on what the cause is, you might use things like compression. What are some of the other techniques that accompany the debridement?
Yeah, so once we've really identified what we believe the etiology of the wound is, it's going to help us in what causes that wound, and we address those things. In the case of venous stasis ulcers, for whatever underlying reason, we have swelling in the leg. So primary treatment's going to involve compression wraps on the legs that increase the pressure around the leg and push that swelling out of the tissues and back up to the heart and to the body.
And improve the overall circulation that way.
Really, at least improve the microcirculation to the ulcers themselves, which aren't healing.
And then you monitor them on a weekly basis to just see if it's working.
That's correct. Yeah. And we do, obviously, for each of these etiologies, there's going to be a standardized approach, and we're going to do standard therapies that are going to advance to, you know, as we go along.
So, Dr. Alfaro, as a surgeon, how do you get involved?
Well, I'm going to use the analogy Dr. Havar used, construction. When I approach the patient, I always look at the wound as a two-phase process. The first phase is, do we need to remove any dead tissue? And when we say tissue, we have two components. We have the soft tissue and we have the bone. So we basically look at the wound and see if he has any devitalized tissue or devitalized bone. The first goal is to get rid of all these unhealthy tissue, because the wound's not going to heal as long as you have necrotic tissue in there. After we finish that demolition phase, then we go into the construction phase, and that would be to help close the wound. There are several things that we can use to help with that. There are vacuum-assisted devices, which we can use to help contract the wound, and many times they are very successful, shrinking the wound size and make it easy to close. There is surgery.
Just before you go on, so basically it's kind of negative pressure, a vacuum, like a vacuum cleaner
exactly.
would work, and pulls the skin
pull the
or
edges
the bone.
Together, mm-hmm. And it helps develop good granulation tissue, so the speed of healing is enhanced by this process.
So it's a mechanical thing, but that sounds
exactly.
like it's very interesting.
Exactly. Yeah. The other alternative is surgically, is we do skin grafts. If we have a bed of the wound that's completely clean and granulating, then we can put a skin graft on and close. We take the skin donors typically from the thighs. Or if it's some other wounds, we can actually move some flaps, meaning a good thickness of tissue from the surrounding area, and try to approximate the edges and close it completely over that particular wound.
And then if there are underlying problems that have caused that wound, and you do a graft or something surgical, you also, it sounds to me like, would have to treat some of those underlying causes as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. Speaking, for instance, about pressure ulcers, we always warn the patients that whatever we do, if the pressure is still there, the outcome is still going to be unsuccessful, because even after we graft the patient and close the wound completely, if they're still sitting and causing pressure on their back, the ulcer is going to come back. So the cause has to be treated as well as the ulcer. And
okay.
Most of the times you go in two parallel directions to help heal the ulcer completely.
Yes, so you do direct treatment, but you also treat the kind of underlying causation.
Absolutely.
So I think you and I actually, Dr. Hybor, had a conversation a year ago or so about hyperbaric therapy, which is another approach. Tell us what that is, and I know you're involved in that.
That's correct. So as we move through standard therapies and find certain wounds just aren't healing despite it, there are those that are going to benefit from advanced therapies, and one of those is hyperbaric oxygen. And that's actually when patients undergo treatment for about 1.5 to 2 hours a day and at an increased pressure, breathing 100% oxygen. And so we're actually able to deliver a tremendous amount of oxygen directly to the body and to these tissues in the areas of the problem wound.
And what is what's the mechanism by which that works? In other words, by getting that much more oxygen, it obviously oxygenates the blood more heavily. Mm-hmm. And so how does that make for wound healing?
Sure. So in the cases of select diabetic foot ulcers, select arterial insufficiency ulcers after standard therapy, obviously in both cases, and other select what we call ischemic wounds, hyperbaric oxygen therapy not only can deliver immediate increased levels of oxygen, but on a local and systemic level, it actually stimulates growth of new small blood vessels, what we call vasculogenesis. And so that these new small blood vessels grow up to the ulcer and provide the blood flow, nutrients, oxygen needed where it had been lacking. And in addition, it can also stimulate collagen formation and regrowth of that granular bed that Dr. Alfaro was referring to, and then finally the skin growing back over. In other conditions also, we may be able to provide antimicrobial effects with that high-dose oxygen as well.
So it really can be very effective.
It
is it kind of your last line of defense, or is it, I mean, where does it fit in the treatment protocol?
In the treatment protocol, it would fit. We usually will assess these wounds at about 4 weeks with standard therapy and decide if we're getting the progress we want, which typically for me is at least a 30% healing. And if we're not there, we start to look at these advanced treatments, and that's where we might bring hyperbaric oxygen.
And there's some new
in.
Cellular aids that are out too as well. I mean, are there some new growth factors and things that they're using? Are those actually now more experimental, or are they actually working?
Some of them are, and some of them are actually used with patients. And I personally used some of them, and we had some good success with them. But by and large, they are not a typical part of the standard care. Usually in an advanced phase where the wound is really sort of resistant to healing, and we're trying to help close it with additional devices and techniques.
So tell us, I understand now something new has been added now that you're also offering these services at the Upstate campus downtown, but you have some new services being available at Upstate University Hospital at Community General. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so with the combining of University Hospital Downtown and Community General, we've really been able to expand the wound care program and services so that we can provide wound care to patients in both locations. And I know for patients there can be a preference one way or the other as far as where they get their care. And as part of that, Dr. Alfar now in the wound care program is seeing patients at the Community General campus as well, who may benefit from surgical management of their wound.
Besides the fact that it's more convenient, perhaps, in terms of location for where you live, has it also opened up more opportunity for people to be seen? In other words, I would think if you only had one facility, you might have only, you'd have a longer wait. Is that true, too?
That's correct. The patient population at Community General are a little different in the sense that what I have seen are patients that have long-term attachment to this hospital even before it was part of Upstate. So with their loyalty to Community General, we were able to provide them with this kind of care. And in the meantime, I always give them the option of either to continue the care at Community General, or if we need something more sophisticated, most of them are willing to come to Upstate to have that care.
So generally, do people access your services via referral from their primary care physicians? I mean, they don't call directly, or do they?
Via referral anyways, whether it's from a primary care physician or a specialist, you know, who's referring them in for their wound.
Well, it sounds like you're doing incredible work, very important work. Obviously, this is very serious. Those are serious issues, and we're thrilled now you're in two locations. So thank you very much for coming in. My guests have been Dr. Marvin Heibauer, Medical Director of the Wound Care Program and Hyperbaric Medicine at Upstate Medical University, and Dr. Mohammed Alfar. He's the director of the Clark Burn Center and specializing in surgical treatment of non-healing wounds at Upstate Medical University as well. We have to take a short break, but we'll be right back after the news. I'm Linda Cohen, and you're listening to FM News Radio 106.9 and 570 WSYR.